dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas, and Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as a tour of the battle space of the war for the free world. There are few fronts in that war more important than communist China, and it is, in fact, a part of the world in which we have increasing reason to be concerned because of the military buildup and, well, evident increasing aggressiveness of the Chinese. There are few people who understand all of that better than our first guest. He is Richard Fisher. He is a senior fellow in Asian military affairs at the International Assessment and Strategy Center. He was with the Heritage Foundation for many years. He is the author of China's Military Modernization, Building for Regional and Global Reach. Rick, it's great to have you back with us. Thank you so much for joining us.
Frank, thank you for having me back.
Let's get right into it on this summit that President Obama will be having with the Chinese counterpart, Xi Jinping, this weekend. Here in the United States, we're told one of the things that will be on the agenda, of course, is going to be the national security challenges that the two countries are facing. What do you expect, if anything, Rick, though, will be said of what China represents in terms of a threat to the United States as a result of the buildup that you have been monitoring so closely?
Well, if the president were only to repeat what has been published by the Pentagon in the last month, the latest congressionally mandated China military power report, and also saying what a Secretary of Defense has been saying publicly in Asia, that would be a tremendous advance for the United States representing itself and warning the Chinese that we're getting serious, that we're really concerned. Now, will that happen? I don't know.
Well, before we get to that, let's talk about what those sort of clarion calls have entailed, Rick, and then we'll get into what might or might not happen this week. You've talked about Chuck Hagel. I know he spoke about Chinese hacking as a particular matter of concern, but tell us about that, and tell us about the what's been reported to be the Pentagon's assessment of China's military buildup.
Well, for the first time, the most recent Pentagon report has started to show some ankle about China's future power projection ambitions, stating that China is likely to build several aircraft carriers over the next 15 years. That's 3 to 4, adding up to 4 to 5 carriers by 2030. This is important because for the first time, the Pentagon report is doing its job. It's warning our leaders about a future threat that we can anticipate and build up toward if we decide to do so. So in that sense, the report did a service. But on the other hand, it also got rid of a very important chart about China's missiles and nuclear weapons. And there's a great deal of uncertainty about that. And the administration really doesn't want to talk about China's growing nuclear forces because it'll undermine its own unilateral disarmament agenda.
And to the extent that we're seeing this really across the board, as you've indicated, Rick, in nuclear forces, conventional forces, space control capabilities, cyber warfare, as Chuck Hagel's talked about, electromagnetic pulse capabilities, for that matter, is there any way to construe this in your professional judgment as the sort of buildup that has an offensive character to it, a desire to assert itself not just as the dominant force in its region, but far more broadly and at our expense as well?
Well, I would cast it far more broadly. The Chinese do. The Chinese, in their commentary about the United States, regularly accuse the Americans of waging a Cold War against China, of engaging in Cold War policies. And that's just the way to view it. When the Chinese accuse you of something, it's usually because they're doing it themselves in spades. And we're in a Cold War with China, and we have to now view every aspect of our relationship with China through a Cold War lens. A lot of us have forgotten how to do that. Many more of us never want to go back to that experience. But it is wholly necessary that in order to contain China in any conceivable way, we have to reorder our relationship with China as we did the Soviet Union during the Cold War.
Yeah, this is a very important insight, Rick Fisher, and I really appreciate you putting it so starkly, because I think that most of us are under the illusion, and I think that's not too strong a term, that as we're told endlessly, because we have such intimate economic ties with China, we couldn't possibly replicate the kind of hostility that characterized U.S.-Soviet relations for most of the post-war period, namely the Cold War, as you say.
We avoided those economic ties with the Soviets because we knew that their economy fed in 1,000 pipelines into their military. Well, this is the case in China. Their whole economy is structured and designed to feed future military strength. So all the joy and benefits that we think we're deriving from this wonderful economic relationship that is not just sustaining our economy, but so many others around the world, this is all actually feeding into a future military threat. And we have to figure out how to stop that from happening.
Yeah. And in fact, this is not simply conjecture on your part, Rick Fisher, expert as you are on these matters, but it's actually what Deng Xiaoping actually declared was the policy of China. And it has been ever since to ensure that various other sectors of the economy all support the military. Rick, let me ask you about something we've been talking about with several other guests in the course of the run-up to this summit this weekend. And that is a very provocative step that China took. Specifically to announce that they are now henceforth considering the South China Sea, or at least much of it, as really internal waters of China. How does that fit into this Cold War stratagem, as you see it, by China, and what should our response be to it?
Well, it has been a long time in coming. They've been telegraphing this move for at least 4 decades. We should have read the mail. Locking out the South China Sea, putting up toll booths at the northern and southern ends, as this would imply, is a direct threat to our economic stability. By holding their hands around the throats of the economies of Northeast Asia and Southeast Asia in this manner, we're facing a real threat. This is a direct threat. The way in which the global economy is so interconnected, if you put your finger on any one artery, you very quickly affect everything else. And that is what China is doing. And are we going to stand up to this? Are we going to tell them this is not going to happen? I don't know, because for the last 40 years, the United States has also been neutral, very loudly neutral about the competing claims of the South China Sea. And that would have to change.
This weekend summit, Rick Fisher, is, of course, an opportunity for such a very strong signal to be sent. I asked you to defer momentarily, so we got this backdrop to that summit. Give us your sense of what President Obama is likely to say and do specifically on points like this. And as you rightly say, the necessity of pushing back in this Cold War we're in with China.
A lot of stock is being put on this so-called informal summit, the shirt sleeve summit out in California. I think historically, such exchanges only really work when the Chinese side understands that there is a real friend sitting in the other chair. If a real friend is not sitting in the other chair, then informality and real exchange is probably next to impossible. And even when Hu Jintao has come to the White House and has had meetings in rooms with only interpreters and maybe one or two staffers, supposedly as intimate as you're allowed to get, the Chinese are not intimate. They have a script and they stick to it.
Indeed. And when the friend of China is in the presidency of the United States, it's probably not a good thing for the United States. Rick Fisher, we'll come back to you, I hope, next week to talk about what actually came out of all of this, and more to the point, what are the trends that are likely to shape our destiny in this, as you rightly say, Cold War with China? Thank you for your great work at the International Assessment and Strategy Center. Keep it up. We'll talk with you very soon. Next up, we'll talk with Henry Now about his take on the summit and also the Donilon for Rice swap out at the NSC. Straight ahead.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.